News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. Special Envoy for Venezuela, Elliot Abrams, says the time for talks with President Nicolas Maduro has long passed, except to negotiate his departure.
Instead of trying to accommodate Maduro through contact groups or dialogue, we urge countries to recognize Juan Guaido as interim president and join us in responding to his call for immediate international humanitarian assistance to meet the needs of the Venezuelan people.
Abrams announced the U.S. has revoked visas for some members of the Venezuela's Constituent Assembly, whose job is to put together a new constitution. The opposition and many Venezuelans say the 2017 election called by Maduro to elect members to the body was rigged. Meanwhile, the State Department says it's procuring and pre-positioning food, medical supplies, and other humanitarian aid to send into Venezuela at the request of the opposition leader and self-declared interim president Juan Guaido. U.S. President Donald Trump lashed out Thursday at congressional investigations of his finances and business dealings, spearheaded by newly empowered opposition Democrats in the House of Representatives. He criticized Congressman Adam Schiff, chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, whom he said had found zero Russian collusion in the 2016 presidential election, but was now going to be looking at every aspect of his life, both financial and personal. Schiff was asked if his committee will wait for special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation to be completed before proceeding with a new investigation into President Trump's finances and foreign connections.
We are not. We will do our best to deconflict with a special counsel, but if we took the position a year and a half ago that we need to wait until special counsel was done, we wouldn't have been able to undertake any of our work.
And the issue has lingered since Trump launched his presidential campaign and broke with modern precedent by not voluntarily disclosing his tax information. This is VOA News. Sudan's crackdown on anti-government protesters could jeopardize efforts to normalize relations with the United States, according to some key U.S. observers. Since protests erupted December 19th over high inflation and rising bread and fuel prices, rights groups and news sources, including VOA, have issued reports of arbitrary arrests, detentions, and killings. Protests continued Thursday as hundreds of people took to the streets of Khartoum, demanding the release of detained activists, and longtime President Omar al-Bashir stepped down. He refuses to do so. The United Nations humanitarian chief Thursday called on Yemen's Houthi rebels to give aid workers access to unused grain that could feed nearly 4 million starving people. That grain is stored in silos near the port city of Hodeidah and is at risk of rotting. Democrats in the state of Virginia are struggling to come up with a resolution to three interlocking crises. AP correspondent Mike Rossi.
Democrats are navigating a minefield of controversy in Virginia as Governor Ralph Northam and Attorney General Mark Herring confront separate blackface scandals, and Lieutenant Governor Justin Fairfax faces an allegation of sexual assault, which he denies. In Richmond Thursday, the Reverend Al Sharpton said,
"Forgiveness without a price is not forgiveness, it's a pass."
The Virginia Legislative Black Caucus is calling for Northam's resignation while holding off on similar demands of Fairfax and Herring. Virginia's two U.S. senators and seven Democratic congressmen are calling for an investigation of Fairfax and urging Herring to take steps to regain the public's trust. I'm Mike Gracia.
Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos is accusing the National Enquirer of using extortion and blackmail against him, involving very personal photos. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
Jeff Bezos says the National Enquirer is threatening to publish revealing photographs of him unless his private investigators back off the tabloid. Bezos, who also owns the Washington Post, is a frequent target of President Trump's criticism. He says he's decided to go public despite the embarrassment. Last month, the Enquirer published a story about Bezos having an extramarital affair, so he had private investigators look into how the tabloid obtained lurid text messages. Now Bezos has made public an email warning him. The Enquirer obtained photos, including a below-the-belt selfie of him, and says it might publish them unless he publicly said he doesn't think the story about him is politically motivated. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani's denouncement Thursday of the arrest of a group of ethnic Pashtun activists in neighboring Pakistan has triggered a harsh response from Islamabad, reigniting bilateral political tensions. The unusual reaction by Ghani came 2 days after authorities in the Pakistani capital arrested about 24 members of a nonviolent group. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone's president declares rape and sexual violence a national emergency.
Rape has become the biggest violence epidemic we have here right now. It has become so endemic that babies as old as 3 months are on record as having been raped.
Mohamed Rachman Suarez, Sierra Leone's information minister, a pro-opposition group in Liberia, demands the immediate resignation of President George Weah. We also hear from President Weah's spokesman. Burkina Faso's military is accused of executing innocent civilians. And Cameroon's Anglophone General Conference deploys a diaspora emissary.
We decided on the 12th of January that a general consultation of all Anglophones and Francophones opinion leaders must be consulted before deciding to organize a conference.
Ellis Smith is chairperson of the organizing committee of the Anglophone General Conference, and we'll hear the views of two Nigerian voters ahead of their country's February 16 presidential vote. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio Thursday declared rape and sexual violence a national emergency. The president says sexual penetration of minors is punishable by life imprisonment. He also ordered all government hospitals to provide free medical treatment and medical certificates to all rape and sexual abuse victims. Sierra Leone recorded more than 8,500 cases of sexual and gender-based violence last year. Mohamed Rachman Suarez, Sierra Leone's information minister, says President Maada Bio believes the government has a moral obligation to give Sierra Leone children a safe future.
Rape has become the biggest violence epidemic we have here right now. It has become so endemic that babies as old as 3 months are on record as having been raped. The president is very angered. He's very devastated at the launch of this emergency against rape penetration. He kept fighting back tears. He believes that over the years, we have been known for all the very wrong reasons. We have been described as an Ebola country, mudslide country for war. So he is keen and eager to change the narrative in the firm conviction that Sierra Leone offers a lot more than just bad news. So he sees it as a moral obligation for the government to ensure that our children get a safe and secure future. They are able to grow up in an enabling environment where they can realize their fullest of potentials.
Mr. Minister, is there a single case or incident that motivated the president to issue the state of emergency?
There is quite a preponderance of rape here, but the most galling one is the penetration of a 3-month-old baby. I mean, that is unimaginable. It is condemnable as it is abhorrent. This was the last straw that broke the camel's back.
There is already a Sexual Offenses Act in Sierra Leone. So how would the president's state of emergency be different?
Well, already there are a lot of lacunas in that act. When the president declared a national emergency on rape and sexual penetration, he made specific pronouncements, gave specific directives, including the fact that matters can now be tried straight in the High Court rather than having to go through preliminary hearings in the Magistrate Court. That in itself has been one of the causes of delays in prosecution and most times dissipating energies of rape victims to a point that they abandon many of these causes. A special court will be trying rape and sexual violent cases. Apart from that, in the police division, he now says there must be a special division exclusively reserved for trying rape and sexual penetration matters. So all of these cocktail of measures will ensure that these matters are tried expeditiously.
Exactly, because I was just about to ask whether the government has the legal support system to handle the barrage of rape cases that are likely to come up because of the president's state of emergency.
Well, the president did note he understands it is not only delays in prosecution that leads to all of his problems. He also understands that the absence of a forensic lab is quite a major issue. The inadequacy of funding units dedicated to fighting against sexual and gender-based violence is another matter. So all of them, the president and the chief justice, all the speakers called for a multi-sectoral approach to fighting this ugly menace which has threatened the safe and secure future of our children.
Mohamed Rachman Sware is Sierra Leone's Information Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. A pro-opposition group, the Economic Freedom Fighters of Liberia, has called for the immediate resignation of President George Weah. The leader of the group, Emmanuel Gonkwe, told a news conference Wednesday that President Weah has failed the Liberian people in his first year.
On 1 year of the president's stewardship, we are now experiencing the worst budget shortfall in the history of our country. Even during the war years, we did not experience such budget shortfall. $250 million is alarming. In 1 year of the president's stewardship, he continues to violate the statutes and the constitution of our country. So we believe, from the economic freedom fighter perspective, that the president is grossly incompetent to lead the country as a president, and there's a need for him to step down.
When President Weah addressed the nation, he said Liberia is better under his leadership. Now you're saying otherwise. You want him to resign.
The president said Liberia is better off under his leadership, but he did not point to any indicators. The first thing you know, hospitals are being forced to shut down. Hospitals are announcing SOS calls for people to rally around and collect fuel for generators and collect medications or drugs for the hospitals to function. So there is no economic indicator to suggest that our country is better off 1 year ago.
Another reason you outlined said the president lacked the moral aptitude to talk about corruption.
No president again would address the nation without telling the world or a citizen what he or she would do to tackle corruption. The reason why we have issue infrastructure deficit, the reason why we have issue with the health sector, the reason why we have issue with everything in this country is because corruption has eaten up the fabric of our nation. Now you have the president who stood before the legislature and failed 100% to talk about how he's going to tackle corruption.
Emmanuel Gonkwe is the leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters of Liberia, a pro-opposition group. He spoke with reporter Moses Gaziewu in Monrovia. Meanwhile, President George Weah's press secretary, Isaac Solo Kegne, says the Economic Freedom Fighters of Liberia is an organization of disgruntled opposition members whose main aim is to see President Weah fail.
Who do you call Economic Freedom Fighters of Liberia? Where are they from? Have you done a profile of these groups to know who they are? These are programmed, planned, and stained opposition members who just organize themselves right after the elections because they feel that after the elections is war. So all they want is to ridicule this government. All they want is to spread lies. All they want is to spread fake propaganda to take the reputation of this president who is trying to do all he can to make Liberia better. And these are people who don't want the country to progress. So they will say all sort of things. You are here in a country. You know exactly what is unfolding. How much do you see people grumbling in the street? Look at the media. People go on the airwaves. You have more media institutions in Liberia than ever before under previous government. No journalists, no matter what they write, no matter what they report, whether it's positive or negative, whether it is constructive engagement, no journalist has ever been detained. No media institution has ever been closed. That had been a trademark of previous administration. They will always say the president is doing nothing because they do not believe what the president is achieving in 1 year period. This is the president in our history that has gone all out. Every time he made a foreign trip, we gain. We are at peace with all of our neighbors. Employees are being paid regularly. You talk about inflation or you talk about exchange rate, what have you? What is the exchange rate of the US dollar around our neighbors? We have the lowest. But is that what you have? What determines the value of the US dollar is the foreign export.
Isaac Solo Kegne is the press secretary to Liberian President George Weah. He spoke with reporter Moses Gaziewu in Monrovia. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, February 8th. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. Burkina Faso is increasingly being targeted by Islamist militants from neighboring Mali and Niger, according to security analysts. This week, the government claims to have killed nearly 150 so-called jihadists in the north of the country. But Human Rights Watch has alleged that some of those killed in the crackdown were likely innocent civilians. Ricky Stryak reports from Dakar.
Rights groups are questioning Burkina Faso's claim that it killed 146 jihadist militants in the country's north this week. Militants had killed 14 civilians Monday near the Mali border, said an army spokesman, provoking their response. Human Rights Watch says some of the men were likely unlawfully killed suspects and innocent civilians executed in front of their families. Corinne Dufka is the group's Sahel director.
I spoke with a few people with knowledge of these incidents. One of them described speaking with women who were weeping, talking about how their husbands had been taken from their homes and killed in front of them.
Dufka says illegal killings and abuses only serve to recruit more terrorists. Dufka was in northern Burkina Faso in recent weeks and says locals told her they felt caught between the military and terrorists.
The local population consistently described to me being between a rock and a hard place, being fearful of both the army and the Islamists, and, you know, simply wanting to live in peace, but feeling as though they were blamed on the one hand by the army for collaborating with the Islamists. And yet when the Islamists rocked up and came into town, they felt under pressure, you know, to either provide information or sell goods.
The Burkina Faso military did not respond to requests for comment on the allegations. Terrorist attacks are on the rise in Burkina Faso as militants spill in from neighboring Mali and Niger to set up camp. There have been more than 200 attacks since 2016 and dozens since the beginning of the year. Burkina Faso's army commander Thursday was reported as saying jihadists killed 5 paramilitary police and wounded 3 others in retaliation for this week's counter-terror operation. Leaders of Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania, and Niger met in Ouagadougou Tuesday to discuss battling the region's Islamist militants. Burkina Faso President Roch Marc Kabore said they would reinforce and accelerate the so-called G5 Sahel force launched in October with the support of France and the United States.
Troisièmement, nous avons également la nécessité de travailler, comme je l'ai dit, à la résilience.
He said, secondly, we will ensure that economic and social projects are put in place and made accessible to all the people of the Sahel region, he says. Thirdly, we must work with the youth and women in the different parts of the Sahel through projects that will allow them to live decently and not be recruited by the terrorists. According to the United Nations, more than 80,000 people are internally displaced from the fighting, and schools and health centers have closed. The lack of services plays into the recruiting tactics of the militants, says Serge Bambara with Ballet Citoyen, French for the Citizens' Broom, a Burkina Faso political movement. The people feel left behind, says Bambara, because there are a lot of regions left out of the system. All that can create a form of frustration, he says, that feeds into the recruitment for jihadists. Ricky Shryock for VOA News, Dakar.
Nigerians go to the polls a week from tomorrow to elect a new president. Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, head of the Economic Community of West African States Poll Observer Mission, met Thursday in Nigeria with the Independent Electoral Commission to understand the process. Electoral Commissioner Yakubu Makmu told Mrs. Sirleaf the February 16 election will be free, fair and transparent. VOA's Peter Clotter is in Lagos covering the election. He spoke with two Nigerian voters for their perspectives ahead of the election.
I'm hopeful that this election will be a peaceful one and it will be a change that Nigeria has been waiting for. You know, we've been having recycled politicians over the years, so I really hope that this year's election will bring about the change we are hoping.
Which of the candidates do you think can bring change?
Well, I watched the presidential debates and I think I like Feladuro Toye and the other guy too. So if I would be voting, I would vote for either Fela or the other guy.
Why do you have so much hope in the two, not the two leading contestants, I'm talking about Atiku Abubakar and incumbent President Muhammadu Buhari?
Well, I don't believe in both of them because Atiku was once the vice president and we have seen him come into power. Buhari is the current president of Nigeria and we are not seeing what we expected to see when we voted him in power. So these two people, they are new. They are young, fresh ideas, everything fresh. So let's just give them a chance and see what happens.
So looking forward to February 16th, what are your expectations?
Well, I just hope the election will be a free and a fair one because I'm scared right now for Nigeria because I know that those in power could do anything to rig the election. So I just hope that this country is given a chance to run a free and fair election.
You said you've decided on who to vote for on February 16th. So tell us who you are going to vote for.
Bara and Osibajo.
Why?
There are 3 years in government. They performed more than the PDP. PDP used complete 16 years to rule us in this country. There is no economic changes. But when Buhari comes, the agriculture, then all this road race, they fixed it. So now we are now improving in agriculture. All the roads, they are fixing it back. And Nigeria can prove that they have some reserves. So that I've decided myself to vote for Buhari and Osibaji when I see the improvement they brought to this.
Some people said when President Buhari was campaigning, he said he will end terrorism, the Chibok girls will be brought, and that terrorism will be no more. Some people said he has failed. What do you say?
The Chibok girls are kidnapping under the PDP regime, and they brought some of them back, the remaining few.
So what's your message to the people of Nigeria as they get ready to go vote?
Everybody has right to choose the leaders of his choice.
The views of two Nigerian voters. They spoke with viewers Peter Clotty, who is in Lagos, covering Nigeria's February 16 presidential election. The crisis in Cameroon's English-speaking region is in its third year. The country's three main religious bodies, Islam, Roman Catholic, and Presbyterian churches, have been trying to organize a national conference to discuss the future of the country. The self-proclaimed Ambazonia separatist movement had said it is against the conference. This week, the churches sent Ellis Smith, chairperson of the organizing committee, to meet with Cameroon diaspora and solicit their views on the way forward. Smith was in Washington this week and explained to me the purpose of his mission.
I'm here because as the Secretary General and Coordinator of the Anglophone General Conference, the men of God who are the organizers of the conference led by Cardinal Toumi, we decided on the 12th of January that a general consultation of all Anglophones and Francophones opinion leaders, political and civil society activists must be consulted before deciding to organize a conference. And that consultation meant going out of the country and meeting with the Anglophone diaspora, most of whom are the ones leading the uprising or the insurgency currently taking place in Cameroon.
It seems to me the two sides are dug in. The Cameroonian government wants an indivisible country. The Ambazonia separatist movement wants Ambazonia. Is there a room for negotiation?
Yes, there is a room for negotiation. Contrary to what I think some people or mostly the PR firms hired by the government, they almost always want to paint the pro-independentists who tag themselves as Ambazonians, as people who do not want to negotiate, but they are really willing to talk because they know the suffering that they are going through. I think the people who do not want to talk, sincerely speaking, it is the government. Because the government doesn't want to talk about the future of the country, whereas the Ambazonians, or what I preferably like to call the pro-independentist group, want everything to be on the table, which means that the independence, the return to pre-1972 federal system, or the decentralization that some of them are already saying that they say decentralization or decentralization plus. So the Ambazonians, as I met them, they are willing and ready to talk, but they don't want to talk in Cameroon or in any African country. They would prefer to meet the Cameroonian government unconditionally in a neutral ground, maybe in North America or in Europe.
Just this week, the Ambazonia declared a 9-day lockdown. One of the demands they have made repeatedly is that Cameroonian troops should be withdrawn from the English-speaking regions and the release of all Ambazonian detainees, including their leader or their president, Sisiku Julius Ayuk Tabe. When the negotiations start, is this something that is supposed to come up front?
The most important thing that we at the Anglophone Conference think is that it is important for both warring factions to be able to sit somewhere. But bringing in preconditions is only going to postpone the possibility of both sides to sit on the table.
Ellis Smith is chairperson of the organizing committee of the Anglophone General Conference. He was speaking with me in Washington, D.C. Five minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the confirmation that an investigation has been launched into Kenya football match fixing allegations. The World Football Governing Body has established a prima facie case against former Harambee Stars defender George Owino Audi for potentially committing breaches of FIFA's code of ethics between June 2009 and March 2011. The player and three unidentified are said to have been paid millions of shillings by notorious match fixer Singaporean Wilson Raj Perumal to throw away the Kenya national team's matches. Away from the match-fixing allegations now to the CAF AFCON Under-20, which got underway in Niger a week ago. Senegal have become the first African team to qualify for the FIFA Under-20 World Cup Poland 2019. This was after the second match day in Group B at the CAF Under-20 African Cup of Nations Niger 2019, where the Young Lions of Taranga confirmed their place in this year's World Finals after winning their back-to-back matches, defeating Ghana 2-0 at the Stade de Maradi in Niger following an earlier 2-0 win over Mali. The top two teams in each group will advance to the semi-finals and book tickets to FIFA Under-20 World Cup Poland 2019. The third and last match day will take place on Friday and on Saturday. Meanwhile, Senegal retains her top spot among CAF teams with 1,505 points and 24th in the world, with Tunisia following closely with 1,493 points on the 28th spot following the latest FIFA rankings released on Thursday. In third position is Morocco, who garnered 1,440 points after descending three places from 40th placed in the previous list to 43rd. Nigeria retained her fourth position in Africa, but dropped two places from our previous 44th position in the world rankings. In rugby news, more than 30 national federation heads are expected to gather in Morocco for the upcoming Rugby African Summit, which will mark the end of Abdelaziz Bourdia's long tenure as the president of the Continental Governing Body. The inaugural edition of the event is scheduled to take place at the Adam Park Marrakesh Hotel from February 27th to March the 2nd. And finally, in volleyball, the Confederation of African Volleyball says that only 12 teams will compete to send teams to Morocco. Unlike in the past tournament where all the 54 countries and regions were cleared to compete, the Confederation is looking for quality and restricting qualification to best 7 teams in the zones in each gender. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington. And do have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio on Thursday declared rape and sexual violence in a national emergency. The president says sexual penetration of minors is punishable by imprisonment, by life imprisonment. He also ordered all government hospitals to provide free medical treatment and medical certificates to all rape and sexual abuse victims. Sierra Leone recorded more than 8,500 cases of sexual and gender-based violence last year. And that is it for this Friday, February 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clarty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
It's the weekend, and whatever you're doing, you could use a little extra love. Music love, that is. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa, and I've got the perfect weekend show for you.
I just called to say I love you.
First, over 30 minutes of the continent's best pan-African music, commercial-free. Second, Song of the Week, Janjo by Daju. And then two exclusive interviews with artist Soul Prayer from Harare, Zimbabwe, and Free Boy from Kano, Nigeria.
Anywhere I go, I am the number one. It's your boy, Free Boy Sani, DJ Blando on the beat, Duma Records.
So lots of music love coming your way. Don't miss it. Music Time in Africa, this Sunday, 5 minutes past the hours of 15 and 2000 UTC.